You are listening to a message from Thrive Community Church, a church located in Southwest Florida. For more info, visit us at thrive-fl.org.
My name is Hunter Kessler. I am the campus minister and worship coordinator here at Thrive. Normally, John is up here, and I'm back here playing the drums too loud, but we're switching it up today. So we're all going to get out early, right? We're going to have a good time. Get our Sundays rolling nice and quick. I've got a wedding to go to later. It's been a busy week. At any rate, I'm honored to be able to be up here, and hopefully God gives me some good stuff to say. So if you've been around with us anytime since the new year, you know that we are currently in the series called Keep the Change. So this is the third week of the four-part series. And as you know, as the new year rolls around, many people get into the inevitable mentality of new year, new me. And that usually ends up lasting 3-4 weeks, maybe if we're lucky. So we figured going into this this series that we would take that, it's an appropriate time to look at that and just really lean into it and, you know, look further into our motivations for change and how Jesus fits into all of that. So one of the first couple weeks, John mentioned what some of the popular New Year's resolutions are. And we have a chart right on. So these seem to be pretty consistent throughout the years. You know, the top three are usually eat healthier, get more exercise, and save some money. I thought it was a little bit humorous looking at this chart a little closer. I thought it was odd that they put more in the parentheses, right? People aren't just trying to save money. They're trying to save more money. You know, and it just makes me think, like, saving money is a good habit to have, right? There's nothing wrong with that. But people aren't just trying to save money. They're trying to save more money. People that took this poll went in and they're like, yeah, I have money saved and I'm saving money, but I need to save more money. Right? It's almost like these people are just collecting money or hoarding money. You know, it's good to have savings in case of an emergency and stuff, but just having cash locked away to like have cash locked away doesn't really make sense to me. Maybe that's because I don't have money to be saving, but it's just not a hobby to me. You know, and it almost looks like that looking at this chart, you know, almost like collecting baseball cards or records or shoes. Does anybody collect anything for fun or has collected anything before? Yeah? So you guys know that feeling, right? I collect records. And I can always add more records to my collection, right? So I understand that. But again, I don't understand it with money. It's almost like people just open their bank app and look at it and they're like, that's a good number. I like that. That makes me happy. But just like any collector of anything, what happens? Eventually, it's not enough, right? Let me ask you guys this. How much money is enough money? It's more, right? It's always more is always enough, right? When I get more money, I could do blank. You know, if I had more money, I'd buy a bigger house. I'd travel more. I'd get a nicer car. I'd get a new guitar or a drum set or a phone. I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with the comedian Daniel Tosh. A few years ago, he had a bit that was kind of on the same lines of this. He's talking about, you know, everybody knows the phrase, money can't buy happiness, right? So he opens with that. He's like, you know, money can't buy happiness, but you know what money can buy? A jet ski. And have you ever seen somebody riding a jet ski that is sad? Answer is no, you have not. It's funny, though, because everybody knows that saying, right? Money can't buy happiness. But we still try to buy things that bring temporary happiness, right? Or in attempts to avoid being that person, we save away our money forever and never touch it. Now, before I get too far into this, I want to make a personal disclaimer. I have not figured this out. I am no financial guru. And being entirely honest, every person that knows me very well that I shared what I was preaching on suggested that I change it. So if that gives you any idea of where I stand in my abilities to keep my life in order, everyone was like, maybe you should switch. But I definitely think that God planned this intentionally. You know, he's got a good sense of humor. He didn't do this to embarrass me, but I think he knows that you always preach best when you're preaching to yourself. So that's my disclaimer, and if I say anything wrong for the rest of the day, I'm no longer liable. So my hands are clean. So we're going to take a couple steps back and look at that chart again. The top three New Year's resolutions: eat healthy, get more exercise, save more money. Now, these are all good things, right? But there's something that they all have in common. The motivations, more times than not, are with the self at the front end, right? In other words, they're of selfish ambition, which at first, when I kind of like started on that train of thought, I was like, wow, I don't know that calling these things selfish feels right. Like, maybe it's not the right word because it carries such a negative connotation, right? And these things aren't bad things. These things seem to be good and beneficial. But when you think about it, you don't eat healthy for someone else, right? You don't work out for somebody else. Maybe you could make the argument, married people in here, but let's be honest, how long does that normally last? And certainly, we don't save money for somebody else's benefit, and I don't think that takes much thought to realize. So as I was looking further into the idea of selfishness and self-centered motivations, I came across an article from Popular Science. This article was published in January 27th of 2013, if you decide to fact-check me and look into it. Basically, it states that you must use the idea of self to appeal to the motivation of the American people. If that wasn't obvious enough, right? I don't think we needed science to figure that out for us. But it even went on to say that mentioning the common good, teamwork, or caring for others actually dissuades people. And it makes people hesitant to be a part of those things. Now, that was almost 6 years ago, but we still see that in our culture today, right? How many times have you asked someone a favor and they seem hesitant until something for them is offered up? Or, I know that I've had this happen, you just straight up get, well, what's in it for me, right? If it's not good for me, I don't want it. And that's where we're at as a culture and a society and as a generation. We're a culture of self-indulgence. You know, any Parks and Rec fans in here? Treat yourself, right? I watched that episode the other day and I was going to put the video up, but decided against that. If you know, you know. But it's not a bad thing, right, to make sure that you're healthy and financially responsible. But when we're ignoring others' needs because we spend $20 a week at Starbucks, we find ourselves with an issue of selfishness. But lucky for us, this is not the first time in human history that people have ever acted this way. The Church of Corinth actually was in a similar position. So let's look at Paul's letter to the Corinthian church in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. It'll be up on the screen right on. So this is starting in verse 1 going through 7. And now, brothers and sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. In the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able, and even beyond their ability. Entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the Lord's people. And they exceeded our expectations. They gave themselves first of all to the Lord, and then by the will of God also to us. So we urged Titus, just as he had earlier made a beginning, to bring also to completion the act of grace on your part. But since you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in complete earnestness, and in the love we have kindled in you, see that you also excel in the grace of giving. So that was a lot, but we'll be going back through it a little bit. So here we see that the Church of Corinth was excelling in many things, right? Paul acknowledges that. Faith, speech, knowledge, earnestness, and love. But they were forgetting one thing, is giving. Now, here we are in 2019, a couple thousand years later, and we still haven't really figured that out. Why? Because it's easy to put ourselves first, right? If you're only looking out for the benefit of one person, it's easy to keep everything, you know, in control. It's easy to manage things that way. But that's not what God asks for of us. And Paul gives Corinth a prime example of somewhere they can learn from. In the first two verses of chapter 8, he introduces the Macedonian church. So for anybody who doesn't know, at the time, Macedonia had experienced a line of events that pushed them into extreme poverty. Now, Corinth wasn't insanely wealthy either, but they were secure. They were a smallish church existing in a middle to upper middle class city of trade. So they're used to consuming the world at their doorstep, right? People are coming in and out all the time. You know, and a characteristic of any area of trade, of commerce in this time, there's a great deal of diversity, right? So they have access to different religions, cultures, basically any consumable good in the Roman world, they were able to get their hands on it. And of course, with any city that is a trade hub, they're stable, right? They know that they aren't going under anytime soon because people always needed to trade goods. And that's what this ancient society's economy was built upon. So Paul observes that the Corinthian church is doing some really awesome things, but they've really lost touch with the importance of giving, let alone giving generously. So he brings up the Macedonians. These people, despite any legitimate excuse they could offer, refuse to stop giving. You know, they could say, well, you know, we're just really going to focus on us right now. We just need time for ourselves, right? We need to restructure our economy and start rebuilding. You know, when we get to where we want to be, then we'll start giving. But until then, we're just going to focus on us. But they didn't, right? Instead, we look at verse 3 and see that they were giving as much as they were able and even beyond their ability, right? And they weren't sad to do it either. They were actually super pumped. And this is because they didn't see it as a chore, right? They saw it as a privilege. They saw it as a service to the Lord's people. And in all of their excitement, this caught Paul off guard, right? Verse 5, he says, "And they exceeded our expectations. They gave of themselves first of all to the Lord, and then by the will of God also to us." So the Macedonians, Paul rolls up and he's like, "Whoa, you guys just entirely blew me away." You know, and if you've read any of Paul's other letters in the Bible, he sets some pretty high standards. So it must have been an impressive amount that these people were willing to do. So they really understood the importance of giving and giving generously. And even when they had every reason not to give, they continued to because they knew that everything they had was not their own. In Matthew 10:8, Jesus says, "Freely you have received, now freely you give." Notice that it says receive then give, not give then receive. Jesus is saying, take with you the things you've already been given and pass that blessing. Use the tools you've been blessed with to bless others. Now, many of our first thoughts are, well, hey, hold on. I've worked hard for where I am at. I've worked hard for what I've got. Why should I give that up to somebody else? Fair. Okay. But what did you use to do that work with? Your body. Right? Your healthy, strong, two arms, two legs, 10 toes, 10 fingers, two eyes, body that you definitely did not cut a deal with God for, right? You know, we were all, well, okay, that was going to be a blanket statement. Most of us were born in America. We're currently living in America, a place that we can freely profess that we love Jesus, you know, with minimal to no persecution. And we didn't ask God for any of these gifts, but he still decided to give them. And if we think, even for a second, that we have any reason not to give back, then we've missed the point. Freely we receive, and we expect that that's the end of it. Right? How many times do you receive a blessing, and our reaction is like, awesome, thanks, God. And you just keep going with your day, and you're like, oh, I'm so glad God thought of me today. Right? I know I'm guilty of it. But here's the reality. Nothing we have is simply for us. It's all to be shared with others. Now, I was very hesitant to accept giving this message for reasons you guys could probably figure, right? We get into some weird, touchy territory when churches start talking about giving, and specifically when it's giving money, right? So I was pretty anxious about speaking about this week, and at no point do I want this to come off as us being like, hey, give us money. That is not the point of this. Because as I was reading, I realized everything that Paul writes is not about money. It's about our hearts. Right? Looking back at verse 5, the Macedonians gave themselves first to God and then by the will of God to God's people. They weren't giving because somebody came along and told them, hey, you have to give 10% or you're not participating in God's work. They were giving because they were so sold out for Jesus and his church, and they understood so well that every good and perfect gift is from above and not their own, that they had no other response than to give generously. These were people who were much less focused on themselves and much more focused on God and what he could do through them. Now, at no point does Paul say that they were giving heaping amounts of money, right? He actually says the opposite, that, you know, these people were living in poverty. He simply acknowledges that they were giving a lot for what they had. Because God doesn't care how much we give, he cares about our heart behind it. So are any of you guys familiar with the story of the poor widow who only had 2 coins to give? Yeah? Okay. So we're going to read that real quick. Yep. Cool. Jesus sat down opposite the place. This is Mark 12, starting in verse 41 through 44. So Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in 2 very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all of the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all that she had to live on." So the story I'm about to tell doesn't exactly entirely equate, but I felt like it was a good example of like a more something that's a little more real for us now. So how many of you are baseball fans? Anybody like the Red Sox? Okay, awesome. So a few years back, I was a decent family friend of somebody who will be unnamed, but may or may not have thrown the winning pitch in the World Series this year. Not to name names. If you know, you know. If you don't, sorry. So I had spent Christmas Eve at their house a few years back. They live right down in Naples. And so normally for Christmas, I go up to my mom. She lives in Tampa. So I decided, you know, I'll go down there, hang out with them, gift exchange, have dinner. This is after the infamous Thrive Christmas Eve service that happens every year. Mark that on your calendars for next year. So we have dinner, we exchange gifts, and as I'm opening my gift, I realize they got me a stinking GoPro, right? And I'm like blown away, because if any of you know me, you know that I love surfing, wakeboarding, skateboarding, all things that a GoPro is generally used for, right? If anybody doesn't know what a GoPro is, it's a tiny little camera, probably about that big. They make all sorts of like cool waterproof housings for them and stuff. Basically, for anybody who likes to adventure, like that is your camera to go to. So I'm pretty jazzed about this gift. So say my goodbyes, drive home. I get home, and I walk in the door, say hi to my mom, Merry Christmas, whatever. I'm like, you will not believe it. They got me a GoPro. And unexpectedly, my mom's reaction was not the same as mine. Right? I was so confused. And she was, like, almost upset. I'm like, what the heck? Like, you didn't even have to buy me a GoPro. You should be stoked about this. Right? But then I quickly realized she had also gotten me a GoPro. Right? So, she was upset, to say the least. And so She's like, just go ahead and open it. I'm like, okay. So, so I open this gift, and then I realize also the one that I had gotten before my mom's was like a little bit better, right? Not like anything crazy. Like basically an equatable difference would be an iPhone 6 and an iPhone 6S. Like it's not a whole other model. It's just like a little bit better. And so the whole time, my mom's like visibly upset. And she's like, oh, it's not bothering me, I swear. But then she'll bring it up again, right? She's like, oh, I just can't believe that they got you. And then finally, I had to stop her and remind her of how much more that gift meant coming from her, right? My mom works for the school district of Pasco County. The other gift came from a professional baseball player. One of them makes significantly more money than the other, and I don't think I have to clarify who. But even though they gave me the same gift, and they were both great, right? My mom gave much, much more, right? $300 for a professional multimillion-dollar athlete is pennies, you know? From a school district employee, it's much more significant. Now, all of that to say, in the same way, when we think that the little bit we're able to give isn't much, God sees it much differently. God doesn't care about how much we give. He cares about our heart behind it. And Paul addresses this in the next chapter. If we look at chapter 9, verse 7, Paul writes, "Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." So he's saying, you know, if you're giving, but you're like, fine, God. That's not what God wants, right? If we're doing that with that attitude, we need to reassess where we are at before we give. We should be giving joyfully, you know, because when you give to something you believe in, it is no longer a chore, but a privilege, right? I don't know if any of you have ever had friends that have started a business. I've got a handful around here, and you realize like, oh, even if coffee is cheaper at Target, like I'm going to buy it from my friends who make really good coffee, but also part of it is like, you know, I'm going to support the people that I believe in, the company that I believe in. Where you use your money is where your heart is, right? So we should be giving joyfully, because it's a privilege to be a part of something bigger than us. I would like right now to invite the worship band up real quick as we look through one last verse. 2 Corinthians 8, 9. "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you, through his poverty, may become rich." Jesus gave up his wealth to make us rich. He gave up his freedom. He became a slave to the point of death upon a cross to set us free. Right? He gave up his life so that we could have life. He became sin so that we would be made righteous. Jesus doesn't simply save our soul with no regard to our body. He doesn't give us eternity and disregard our present life. He doesn't compartmentalize our lives, only dealing with some needs and only caring about the spiritual parts of us, right? He cares about all parts of us, every part of each of us, and that includes our finances. And when we truly understand how much Jesus has sacrificed for us, we have no response other than to give all for him, right? Not only because of how much Jesus gave, but because of how willing he was to give so much for those who deserved so little. God is not looking for the disinterested giver, but the joyful giver, the giver who acknowledges that nothing that we have is our own and is overflowing with joy to participate in something that is bigger. God doesn't care about how much we give. He cares about our heart behind it.